You're listening to There Ought to Be a Law, the Center for Auto Safety podcast with Executive Director Michael Brooks, Chief Engineer Fred Perkins, and hosted by me, Anthony Simino. For over 50 years, the Center for Auto Safety has worked to make cars safer. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. So doing this kind of work where you're doing consumer safety or any sort of advocacy, it's generally like it takes decades before you make an impact on the world. It's a long, hard struggle. And we do it because, one, it's needed to be done. And two, because you're supporting us. You're helping us out. Before I jump in, you've gone to autosafety.org, click on donate, right? Good. But today is a rare moment where we can celebrate an early victory. And for me, I take this very personally because I personally think it's me that made this the world slightly better today. That's right. General Motors has shut down their Cruise division. their Cruise division was their autonomous BS generation nonsense where they spent over $10 billion to drive over a woman, drag her, and then lie about it. This was available in San Francisco. It was run by this lovely guy named Kyle who basically, you know, he liked remote control cars as a kid. And for whatever, GM said, here you go, run our autonomous vehicle division with no history at all in the automotive world, no history in safety world, no history in traffic and whatnot. Because GM said, hey, we're afraid. Maybe we're not that impressive. Let's give it to some kid in Silicon Valley and let him do it. And well, $10 billion later, they came to their senses. And I think it's because they've listened to this show and they've listened to me reiterate the math repeatedly that self-driving taxi business is a loser. Waymo will eventually come to this conclusion too, but their pockets are much deeper. So they've got a longer period of time if they burn out enough cash and Google says, wait a second, aren't we an advertising company? But yeah, that's...
You know, I will give you all the credit, yeah. Anthony. And in addition to that, you know, Waymo, you know, to talk about what happened there, Waymo is, you know, seems to me to be playing the long game. And that's kind of where Cruise failed. You know, they were trying to move too quick. They were trying to scale the operation up too quick. You know, as you will hear repeated many times by many people, you know, the driverless cars are 99% there. It's just that last 1% that might take another 40 years or more. And so it's not something that can be scaled up in a way that pleases investors. It's not something that's going to allow GM to show great quarterly reports. And we were always a little mystified at GM's attempts to move into this area, given the, you know, we're still looking for that magic use case that brings all these profits into this area that Uber seems to have captured so far. And there's not a lot there, honestly. So we're still, you know, it's Cruise is gone now, and it's probably for the best because safety really was not their number one commitment. And that was made clear by the actions around the crash in San Francisco over a year ago now. And their willingness to, you know, cover things up, hide things from investigators, lie about it to investigators, and do the kind of things that essentially show you that from the top down, they're not, they don't have a proper safety culture in that operation. So we are not sad to see Cruise go by any stretch of the imagination, but they're clearly not the only questionable actor in this space. So we'll be keeping an eye on the rest of them as well.
Yeah. Sadly, I think it means that the CEO of GM, Mary Barry, will probably won't be long for GM.
Really?
How do you justify, hey, we set $10 billion on fire?
Well, she came in after, you know, she came in right after when the ignition switch issue was going with GM and, you know, they were coming out of bankruptcy and all sorts of problems, and she has steadied the ship, and they have, you know, done pretty well under her leadership. So I don't know I guess I would disagree that this is that Cruise is somehow going to be the downfall of Mary Barra, who seems to be doing a pretty good job there.
Well, I want a job where I can set $10 billion on fire. No, just me. All right. Well,
yeah.
I'd take a
job where I could just set $2 billion on fire. I'm much lower threshold for me.
You're not very ambitious.
No, I'm not.
I'm not.
I'm an older person.
I'm not
person.
Setting any money on fire. I don't know what y'all are talking about.
Actually, Michael has his retirement plan set up. He was one of the few people who bought a GM Cruise model car. It's hilarious. If he only kept it in the box, we could have all retired to the Caymans. But he's been playing it on his desk. If anyone wants to make an offer for it, I think his opening bid is $1 million.
Yeah, and it's the Poppy model.
There you go, for collectors out there of defunct companies. But I have to jump right into my gaslight of the week because, so GM Cruise shut down. Kyle, their former CEO, he got to resign after, dragging a woman, lying about it. And so when GM Cruise
let's be clear, the car did that.
Yes,
not Kyle,
yes, right. The car did it, and yes, but he oversaw the people who are like, let's not tell the investigators.
Or our internet was bad. We couldn't show you the whole video.
Right, exactly. Our car didn't drive into wet cement. So anyway, after this happens, Kyle, who now what does he do? Like works on microwaves or something. I don't know. He does some nonsense.
I think it's smaller robots that aren't capable of hurting people.
Oh, right? Well, that's good. He went on Twitter and he posted, in case it was unclear before, it is clear now. GM are a bunch of dummies.
Did he say that?
He did. He posted that on the internet for the world to see.
Oh, there's got to be a non-disparagement clause in his separation agreement. I think that's going to come back to haunt him.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, I mean,
I
think it's pretty clear to everyone following this entire situation that the dummy is the one who lies to investigators at the federal and state level. But I'll leave it at that, Kyle.
Yeah, I think Kyle did. He wins my gaslight because I think he's gaslighting himself. Like,
yeah,
I think he's hoisting his own petard. Anyway, that's it. And so, and related to this, Mary Barra. Am I saying Barra? Is that how you say
Mary
your
name? Barra.
Barra. Okay, Mary Barra. She said on a conference call with Wall Street analysts, you have to understand the cost of running a robo-taxi fleet, which is not our core business, and is very expensive.
Yeah.
Took you $10 billion to figure that out. I sat down one afternoon for like an hour and just did basic math.
I mean, when you look at the world they were entering when they started Cruise, I mean, it's not an absurd proposition that a major automaker should get into it, right? You have Tesla claiming autonomy, even though that's another lie. You've got Waymo doing it. You've got Zoox, Amazon doing it. You've got trucking, Aurora, Kodiak, some of these other trucking companies that are really about to do it. I mean, Aurora is going to, I think in April, going to start having semis run between Houston and Dallas with, they've delayed it recently, but they're going to have semis running between Houston and Dallas without a safety driver. So people are doing it in certain use cases, and I don't think it's outrageous to think that GM could have been involved at some point, or that they could get back into the game at some point and be involved. But the way they went about it, I think was they were moving too fast and safety was not their ultimate concern here.
But GM builds stuff. They don't run taxis. I mean, it's a fundamental flaw when you try to get into a business about which you know nothing. And the only thing you bring to the party is a pile of cash.
Yeah, they sat at the poker table and didn't realize they were the sucker. It's something I think you're right, Michael. I think they could get into this. This is not an industry you want to be first mover advantage. Most industries don't really want to be first mover. But
I think they're saying that they're going to continue to develop autonomous vehicle technology, but it sounds like they're looking more at autonomy from the driver assistance area. They're certainly joining the pack of automobile companies who are trying to turn your driver's seat into a couch in your living room, and putting out systems that are going to be telling people that they can take their attention away from the road at certain points. I wouldn't take that advice quite yet, no matter how much the car costs.
And that's a great segue for our first non-GM Cruise story. AAA has come out with a report about it is the Traffic Safety Culture Index driver profiles. And it talks about, I guess this is people self-reported their risky behaviors. And from the breakdown, it was like safe drivers were like 34.9%, speeding drivers 32.6%, distracted 19%, distracted and aggressive 11%, and most dangerous 2.5%. And the distracted drivers were all like, when we had the sheriff on from nearby Fred's point of view, and I asked him who's more dangerous, drunk drivers or teenagers, he said people texting. They're the most dangerous drivers. They're distracted drivers. And so this report, this is all based off of people self-reporting, which is fascinating. Who put down that they're distracted and aggressive? Like, I kudos for having that self-awareness, but if you have that self-awareness, pull the car over, get out. Like, what's happening?
Well, I don't think there's a checkbox for distracted. I think what they did is they had a questionnaire that said, have you done X within the last 30 days? Or have you done Y within the last 45 days? From that questionnaire, AAA extracted these categories. So I don't think people had to condemn themselves. And there was probably a lot of hedging going on as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that really helps in surveys when you don't just directly ask the respondents the question you're trying to get at. But, you know, the thing that, you know, besides the really scary percentages that Anthony read out, I mean, they make sense and they sound about right. But, you know, around a third of the drivers on the road are trying to be safe and rarely engage in risky behaviors. But, you know, the rest of the people on the road with you, two-thirds of the people are either distracted, speeding, distracted and aggressive, or very, very dangerous drivers. So what a lot of the surveys show to me is that there is kind of a huge amount of cognitive dissonance between what people, what kind of behaviors we know are unsafe versus what behaviors we'll then be willing to go on and engage in when we're in a car. So you see 93% of the response to the survey saying, you know, I recognize the dangers of texting, emailing, or reading while driver, but, you know, 27% of drivers sent a text or an email, 37% read a text or email, and 36% held a phone and talked on it in the past 30 days while driving. You know, out of that 93% that, you know, say they know it's dangerous, you know, we're still seeing a very large amount of people ignoring what they know and, you know, behaving in a way. And it's this, it's a constant struggle. I mean, I think we all struggle with it to some extent. I've resorted to, you know, absolutely turning off my phone in the vehicle, which is difficult to do if you want to use Waze. So I have to turn off my notifications, and I just don't want to be bothered. I don't even want to have the temptation to get a text or something while I'm driving, because the temptation is going to be there every time the notification pops up. And you have to, you know, if you're going to walk around and say, hey, I don't text and drive, or I don't read text and drive or talk and drive, you have to resist every single one of those. It's not easy for people to do if they have, you know, a loved one calling or texting, if they are, you know, in, you know, heavy traffic and moving along at slow rates, they might think it's more okay to check a phone or something like that during those time periods. So, you know, that's the thing I point to here most, is despite the fact that, you know, it seems that everyone, you know, pretty much understands that being distracted is a bad thing, or that driving fast or being aggressive or driving drowsily, we all recognize that those are dangerous behaviors. A large percentage of us are still willing to engage in those behaviors and take that risk. And that seems to be where what these study points to, is that there's a dissonance there that we really need to work on as individuals and as, you know, a country.
Hey, Anthony, I've got a math problem for you. I read somewhere that 80% of drivers think that they're better than average. So my question to you is, why does this mean that 30% of drivers are delusional?
Well, 90% of the people know that 50% of the time that most people are wrong.
So you're passing on that.
Yeah. Exactly. You just throw out some numbers, percentages, and you both look dumb on your face.
Well, that's because
maybe I look dumb.
By definition, an average driver is anything more than 50% or is 50%, right? So if 80% of the people think that they're better than average, that means 30% of the people are delusional because it's impossible for anybody, you know. The average is 50%. So
I mean, I could go with that, Fred. Just generally, 30% of the population is delusional.
I think so. Yeah, and my dating history, you know, indicates that there are very few wanted to go out with me. So,
so you were delusional 30% of the time.
Well, no, those who agreed to were delusional.
Oh. But
yes, yes. See.
Well, they confused. They were They weren't delusional. They were optimistic. Okay.
There's a fine line between them, but anyway, between I digress.
Delusion and optimism.
There is. It's called, you know, Tesla full self-driving bears that out.
Right. So I think one of the, what we're talking about, the distracted drivers, one of the greatest things that's happened in the last, I don't know, say 30 years, is I remember back in the 90s, you'd print out MapQuest directions and you'd hold them
printed
paper on my steering wheel, driving, looking, driving and looking and driving and looking. I'm amazed I never hit anything. Whereas now you just plug in your phone and you say where it's going to go and it will talk to you and say, in 300 feet, turn left. And then you're like, oh, okay, but I'm still looking at the road. I'm not looking down at the screen, which is better. And the software keeps getting better. So I appreciate that quite a bit. So hopefully that will reduce things because I don't know who's physically picking up a phone. Like, can you, like for the last decade, can't you plug all phones into cars? No. At least the last 5 years.
Yeah, you can. A lot of people don't. I have a 2019 Volkswagen, and the Android Auto interface works okay, I guess, but it's a little clunky. The USB connection to it doesn't always pick up. But, you know, it's not great. You know, I have a cell phone holder that sticks into the air conditioning vent, and basically so I will have a map right there within my line of sight and I'm not having to look all around the car for it when I need to look at the map. But I find that a little easier to use than the touchscreen interface, and actually the touchscreen is a little more out of my view than the cell phone is where I've placed it. So that works for me. I don't know. I didn't really enjoy. I mean, my touchscreen is, you know, a kindergarten version compared to what you're seeing in more modern vehicles that have just multiple very large touchscreens. Mine is, you know, about 4x6. You know, a very small screen. So it's not going to help with distraction. I'm not sure if some of the larger screens have better, you know, interfaces or UIs that prevent distraction a little better than this one might. I'm sure some of them do, although I'm sure at the same time that they're large screens that present lots of distractions at the moment, because there's not a lot of, you know, there's no regulation, or there's very little to prevent manufacturers from putting distracting things and all sorts of stuff on those touch screens at this point. So it's kind of the Wild West there.
Well, for those people who describe themselves as driving aggressive, when you find yourself in this situation, do everybody a favor, pull over, just take a breath, realize this is not a competition. You're not in the middle of a war. This is not a battlefield. Cause
I found recently that just leaving really early and arriving early is great for safety and blood pressure. So I advise proper planning.
What I find perfect is the other day I was picking up my wife and I guess I had too much coffee that morning. And she's just like, before we even leave, she's like, I'm driving, get out. And I was like, so everybody, everybody needs a driving buddy. But the thing is,
you have a tell.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, she drives so close to other vehicles. I'm like, stop it.
Yeah, that's makes tough.
Me. But anyway, moving on, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, has a great article we're linking to called Vehicle Height Compounds Dangers of Speed for Pedestrians. This is something we've talked about a lot. The higher the vehicle, the worse the injury. So from the article itself, regardless of vehicle height, higher speeds were associated with increased risk of injury at all severities. Pedestrians struck at 20 miles per hour had a 46% chance of sustaining at least a moderate injury, such as a broken bone or concussion. At 35 miles per hour, the risk of moderate injury climbed to 86%, and serious injury rose to 67%. In general, higher vehicle front ends increased the likelihood of both moderate and serious pedestrian injuries. At 27 miles per hour, the average speed of all the crashes in their study, the median car had a 60% chance of causing moderate injuries and a 30% chance of causing serious. And a median height pickup with a front end 13 inches higher than that of a median car had an 83% chance of causing moderate and 62% chance of causing serious injuries, which is, that's like double for the serious injuries anyway. And I didn't realize the pickup trucks were 13 inches higher, the front ends. That's significant.
Yeah, I mean, you're moving up on the body there, and in doing so, you're going to get closer to organs. You're going to, you know, some pickup trucks are, you know, up near that head neck area. They've gotten so high in many cases. So at might consider to be low speeds, you know, 20 to 25 miles per hour, there are significant problems with the pickup trucks compared to the average sedan. And they even did a comparison, which is interesting, between adding German vehicles into the list, and found that the European standard that applies to German vehicles at does a better job of preventing injuries to pedestrians than, you know, the sedans or the median normal cars that were studied from America. So once again, Europe seems to be leading the way here.
Does the European standard, does it require lower hood heights?
The European standard had already put in place what NHTSA started to put in place this fall, which is some protections to pedestrians that go over the hood to protect the head area from impact. So those standards were already in place. They were already building cars with those standards in place. A lot of European manufacturers had put in kind of the hoods that can pop up when there's a collision to reduce the risk of injury to pedestrians or mitigate the injury. So a lot more was being done earlier in Europe on this issue, which is why they're showing up a little better in the stats.
Well, the Euro NCAP includes credit for pedestrian protection. The US NCAP does not. And that's really what's driving Europe to be safer. So NCAP, take a note here. Just put pedestrian protection NCAP, in your tests.
In its last update, some of that is coming into NCAP. That's what their update from 2-3 weeks ago that they came out with was. It applied both to automatic emergency braking, blind spot warnings, lane keeping, but also had some tests for pedestrian risks. Now, I mean, I think we still have some issues with the way they're going to be comparing and contrasting the winners and losers there, but it's good that they got them in. And we'll see what the administration that's coming in does with that.
So right now these are in, but the brave new world we're entering, is it possible they get just yanked out?
I don't know. I mean, NCAP is an area that manufacturers like. To some extent, they like the comparative qualities of it. They like to be able to say we got 5 stars and our competitor didn't. You know, it's. I don't know. There are quite a few things over at NHTSA that I think that the industry has a problem with before you get to NCAP. So I don't know what's going to happen with NCAP. I don't expect it to be improved at any great rate. It never really is. But it, you know, traditionally during the previous Trump administration, NCAP did not get any improvements. So I would guess that we could expect much of the same. Maybe not, you know, undermining the program, but at the same time, not improving it in a way that could really be beneficial to consumers in the next few years.
But your donation will help us keep putting the pressure on NHTSA moving forward to make cars safer. Go to autosafety.org, click on donate, help stick it to the man. That's not really what we do. But I like the way it said. Michael giggled. Let's go on Consumer Reports. They came out with their their owner satisfaction reliability survey. And okay, drum roll please. The winner of the most reliable car from Consumer Reports Consumer Reliability Index is anybody.
Well, I mean,
how's Fred not jumping for joy?
I've got two of them.
Oh.
Two Subies. I'm a two Subi family.
Yeah, Subaru tops the list this year, displacing Toyota and Lexus, because Toyota and Lexus always wins. But they pointed out that Toyota and Lexus had some problems with, what was it, the Tacoma and their really junky EV, right? Was it the Tacoma?
Had some they had some powertrain, some engine issues in the Tacomas, I think. But yeah, I mean, Subaru has gotten to the top here, which I don't think anyone else has been number one other than Toyota for the past 5 years or so.
Right.
Toyota and Lexus. So they are always leading the pack in this survey. So as long as you don't hit a deer like Fred and have your Subaru out of pocket for a couple of months in certain ways, I hear a lot of good things about Subaru vehicles. I can only imagine that they're fairly reliable vehicles. They had some issues 10 years ago with some of their transmissions that probably dragged them down in the list, but overall they're looking pretty good.
The first U.S. manufacturer on the list is Buick, coming in at number 11. But surprisingly, Rivian is, first of all, they made the list, which is, they don't have every car in there because they don't have enough data. But Rivian made the bottom of the list. And personally, I think Rivians look cool. I like their headlight design. I think they're fun. I think they've taken some interesting engineering things. But they're at the bottom of the list for reliability. Not too surprising, given that they're a small manufacturer, brand new manufacturer. But then at the same time, Consumer Reports comes out with their owner satisfaction ratings, and Rivian makes the top of the list, which is just, I think it's more money than brains problem. Like, I guess if you spend 100 grand, you're gonna be like, I love it.
So I'm pegging this as my gaslight of the week. not from Consumer Reports and not necessarily from Rivian, but it just feels like there's some gaslighting going on here to me, because you've got Rivian coming in. I mean, they only got 14 out of 100 on their reliability score from Consumer Reports, which is about half of what Cadillac got, one notch above them at 27.
Right.
So Rivian's reliability is terrible. And I think it's fair to say that based on this. It's terrible. And yet they got they were the only manufacturer that got 5 out of 5 on the satisfaction side of things, which suggests to me that there's some smoke and mirrors going on there. However, it could just be, if you look at the top five in reliability, you're not seeing a lot of the brands that have, the top five in satisfaction, you're not seeing the brands that come up on top in reliability. You're seeing Rivian, BMW, Tesla, and Porsche, and Lexus comes in at number five, which are, very, expensive vehicles. They have, kind of a customer service system that caters to their customers. You walk into the Lexus dealership and they've got a machine making lattes for you. They've got bagels. There's an owner experience.
Have to find one of those dealerships.
Yeah, that maybe I think we're missing here. And I think maybe what we're seeing here is, Rivians are unreliable. They're a new brand. They're an electric brand. There's going to be a lot of problems there. But they're treating their customers so well that their customer satisfaction scores are absolutely through the roof. And that's really the only explanation I can come up with it for this, because there's just such a great deficit between that terrible reliability rating, which you would think would piss off vehicle owners, and the satisfaction score, which is through the roof.
I think that if they had a Keeping Up with the Joneses index, you'd find a direct correlation between Jonesiness and customer satisfaction. It's the same thing as selling these pickups with the extremely high front ends. It's just a lot of chest thumping going on, a lot of testosterone poisoning going on. But I think in the case of the satisfaction index that they're talking about here, there are a lot of women involved, so there's a lot less testosterone poisoning, but I think a lot more social positioning that gets involved in this. I know people who've got the Porsches, and they're really partial to them, and you can tell who's got a Porsche because they'll always tell you. That's interesting.
Well, that's why I'm always wearing my Ferrari jacket and my Ferrari keychains and all this stuff. I think you're right, though.
I've moved on. I've moved on to Paganis.
Oh, well, you know, you're a 0.001 percenter, okay? But I think it's right, because I think everybody's had the experience where you've paid way too much for something, and it's more of an emotional decision, and you don't want to admit, oh, I got suckered. I bought something stupid. So you're going to be like, I love it. I love it. Yeah. It's falling apart on me. I've personally never spent $100,000 or more on something and been dissatisfied. I would have been the person in there screaming, like, because that's all my money I've ever seen. But I, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe the Rivian dealers, they come out, they give you massages once a week. I don't know. They, you know, they give you caffeine, coffee enemas. I don't know. I don't know what they do. It's not my lifestyle. I don't own a vest of any kind. They seem like you have to have a vest to have one of these. Fred's wearing a vest. For all we know, he might be a secret Rivian dealer or a hedge fund magnet, because that's the only people I see wearing vests. Yeah, because on the owner satisfaction, Toyota comes in at number 13, which is also insane, because I mean, this is not an advertisement for Toyota, but I think it's well known that you can, like, leave that engine running without changing the oil for, like, I don't know, 50,000 miles, 100,000 miles, and it'll be fine. We'll just keep going.
There's one more factor here, which is that all Rivians are new, and for a lot of the cars in that satisfaction list, they're all new. So the Toyotas have been around for a long time. So there's a lot of people driving 15, 20 year old Toyotas. Maybe they're not so happy with them anymore. So I think that's a factor as well.
That's a good point, but also not every Toyota has been recalled the way a Rivian has. Actually, most of their Rivians have been recalled. Not all.
And there's another thing in the article I think is worth pointing out or taking a look at. As part of the reliability ratings, they saw that plug-in hybrids had 70% more problems than gas-powered and hybrid vehicles. And that electric vehicles had 42% more problems noted than gas-powered and hybrid vehicles. However, those problems were down. Let's see. Last year, the plug-in hybrids had 146% more problems than gas-powered and hybrid vehicles. And last year, electric vehicles had 79% more problems than gas-powered and hybrid vehicles, which suggests that both plug-in hybrid and electric vehicles have made a lot of strides in the past year to make their vehicles more reliable, which is great to see.
Indeed. With that, I think let's move into some gaslighting. I've done mine with Kyle gaslighting himself. I've got another one lined up if we need be. Michael, do you want to expound on yours?
Mine was, thinking about doing the Rivian one, but I'm still not sure that that's a gaslight. I don't think it qualifies. So I'm going to switch to, you know, since this may be our last chance to talk about Cruise, I'm going to switch to Kyle from Cruise. But actually, I'm not going to go with Kyle. I'm going to go with what they're still saying in over at GM is, you know, we're fully committed to autonomous driving and excited to bring GM customers its benefits, things like enhanced safety, improved traffic flow, increased accessibility, and reduced driver stress. This is from Dave Richardson, who is Senior Vice President of Software at GM. But, you know, these are still kind of the same claims we have been hearing from Cruise the whole time with its, you know, humans are terrible driver spiel. You know, we're going to enhance safety with autonomy. We're going to improve traffic flow. I don't think there's been any any proof whatsoever posited that that autonomous vehicles have done that. Accessibility, I don't understand how you think accessibility is improved with autonomous driving. That's something we've had a number of contentions with, and reduce driver stress, which, you know, I'm not sure if it's reducing driver stress when they're having to monitor the actions of a robot that can also control their steering at the same time. That's not reducing driver stress for me if I'm in a car. So that's going to be my gaslight of the week, just GM's continued aspirationalism about the greatness of autonomy without any, you know, real proof that it's going to be helping anyone anytime soon.
Excellent. So Fred, before we get to you, I want to point out that Michael gets an automatic +100 for choosing GM Cruise, but he also gets another +78 for using the word aspirationalism. I mean, I'm not even sure if that's a word, but I love it. So Fred, you've got quite the challenge. You're running a deficit. Take it away.
You're familiar with the recycling of sewage debris? People use it as fertilizer.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's everywhere. It's hard. It's actually, if you're getting soil for your yard, it's hard to avoid getting the human poop.
Yeah. And it's great. It gives you kind of a good feeling that you're recycling things. Unfortunately, it leaves lethal chemicals in your yard. So
heavy metals
and forever chemicals and things like that. I think that that's a lot like the voluntary safety self-assessment site that NHTSA set up. It's a rich source of things that kind of make you feel good, but it's filled with lethal byproducts. So I picked one of the examples from that, which is from Volkswagen. They have their VSSA on that website, and I've got a couple of quotes from it. So first they say, "We intend to update our VSSA as our story progresses." That sounds really good, except there's no date on the VSSA, so it's going to be really hard to know when they've updated it. So that's kind of a good start. They go on to say, "We welcome feedback from the public, regulators, and all stakeholders." But they don't offer any means to do that. Michael, I'm sure you've had lots of calls from them getting, soliciting suggestions on how they could improve the safety, right? In fact, I think I can hear your phone ringing right now.
Just don't answer while you're driving.
Yeah, there you go. So moving on to design standards, this is a good one. They say Volkswagen safety system is designed in accordance with industry automotive safety standards and regulations. Anthony, quick question: how many system safety design standards are there for self-driving vehicles?
Zero.
There you go.
Yeah.
So basically they're saying they designed it in regard to nothing. They go on to quote ISO 26262, functional safety for road vehicles, ISO 21448, safety of the intended functionality, UNEC R155, that's the United Nations European standard, which sounds really good, but unfortunately, all of them are built on an unacceptable definition of safety. None of these standards are normative, meaning you've got to subscribe to them, so they're all kind of advisory. And none define safety except as a void. The definition of safety they're using is, quote, "safety is the absence of unreasonable risk," close quote. That's not a design standard. That's just a property that safety must have, but how do you design to that? You know, you can't write that into an engineering specification that anybody can design to. For example, the atmosphere that we all live in is not defined as the absence of a vacuum, but the absence of a vacuum is a property that an atmosphere has to exhibit, right? So it's like saying safety is the absence of unreasonable risk. Well, the atmosphere is the absence of unreasonable vacuum. Makes no sense. Right, but it's also true. So it's a great gaslight criterion. Safety criteria: while we design and test the ID Buzz AD to recognize and respond to many situations, we understand that the ID Buzz AD will experience situations that could not have been anticipated. To address these situations, we've implemented tools to detect unknown situations in the surrounding environment. We will analyze these edge cases and use them as opportunities to improve our ADS.
We will detect unknown situations.
I'm quoting that. Yeah.
This is some precognition stuff.
Yeah. Pretty good. I wish I had some of that. I'd buy more lottery tickets if I had that. So the question is, what criteria will be used by VA, by Volkswagen, since there are no regulations, to determine that its level four vehicle is safe enough for initial testing or for determining when its safety goals need modification? VSSA is silent. They don't tell you what their safety goals are. They just tell you that they've got them. And then finally, the final quote here is, as we transition away from safety drivers, ADS will be responsible for system fallback and for achieving a minimal risk condition, MRC. All safety relevant subsystems will be monitored continuously and provide active feedback if an event arises, yada, yada, yada. The safety of the passengers and all traffic participants have the highest priority in the selection of the most suitable transition to minimal risk condition. The minimal risk maneuver ends in a minimal risk condition. Well, that sounds good. The only problem is that they don't say what the definition of MRC is. And the minimal risk condition formulated by SAE and its J3016 best practices is not inherently safe. And any system that relies on SAE's MRC is the safe harbor for fallback, which they have to do in the event of a fault or departure from the operational design domain, is fundamentally flawed. Equating MRC with safety is no basis for a safe AV design. So that leads me to the conclusion, at its heart, VW's VSSA does not describe their safety goals, does not adhere to any quantifiable safety standards, and it is an excuse in bullshitting the public into believing that VW has public safety at the center of their AV development. That's just wrong. Hence my Gaslight nomination.
I mean, it started off really strong talking about fertilizer. That was, you know, you're getting up there. You mentioned a lot of acronyms. That's some minus some points because, you know, TikTok. But then, you came out okay there at the end. But I, this week's winner has to be me because GM Cruise is gone.
I don't think you're unbiased, Anthony.
I don't think the voting public cares. Okay.
That's a good point.
Listeners, if you enjoy the dulcet tones of Fred Perkins' voice, if you donate a significant amount of money, Fred will record your answering machine message. If you still have an answering machine, we'll use some of your donation to recycle it, I guess. I don't know. Who has a recycling machine?
We're going to record it in a wiggly, piggly parking lot.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Anyway, let's move on to the next story. Oh, this is a bad transition. There's an article titled, Family Blames Elon Musk for Son's Death While Driving Tesla in Autopilot Mode. The family of a California man who died in a horrific crash while his Tesla was in autopilot mode is suing the electric car maker over claims by the company and CEO Elon Musk that its self-driving tech had been perfected and was ready for the road. So this is another case where someone bought a product based on the CEO of the company saying this is what the product does. And unfortunately, if you listen to the show, you know that the Teslas do not drive themselves. And unfortunately, in this case, somebody died.
And if you listen to the show, you also know that Teslas have a terrible habit when they're in autopilot of not recognizing the fact that there is a giant flashing fire truck in the road in front of them and plowing into the back of it, which is what happened here. This happened in 2023, I believe. So the story is about a lawsuit that was recently filed by the family and I believe the brother of the driver. The driver was killed. His brother was injured in the crash. It was in February 18th, 2023. And essentially they were on the interstate going down the road in autopilot vehicle, did not see fire truck that was in the lane in front of them. It was parked across two lanes of traffic. So it was in out in the actual road with the emergency lights on. It was diverting cars from another collision that was ahead. And unfortunately, the driver did not see the crash ahead. Apparently, he was over-relying on the Tesla technology to prevent this kind of thing from happening, and it didn't. And so it's yet another case of, you know, both driver complacency. Obviously, the driver did not do a great job here. But, you know, that's what happens when you have a company like Tesla naming products, things like autopilot, full self-driving, and providing drivers and all of us really with false confidence in their product that results in tragedy when people overtrust it.
Sad news. Next up, here's one. Hey guys, you already know the answer to this because you've done your homework. Which state has the most dangerous traffic laws? I know you're thinking, hey, Montana, you can drive whatever speed you want, but no, not Montana. Wait, Fred, did you not read ahead? Oh, Fred, take a guess.
Missouri, I think, is what they said in the article. I did do my homework, Anthony. Damn it.
Advocates for highway and auto safety, they reviewed state laws, looking for specifically 18 laws that each state would have. And Missouri was considered the most dangerous because it had only one of 18 laws in the books. And that single law allowing red light cameras was deemed invalid by the state Supreme Court. That means since 2015, red light cameras have only been operational in one town in Missouri named Hannibal, Missouri. So what are these other 18 laws that the state of Missouri is just like, yeah, we ain't doing this?
They have a list. One of them is the recommended law that makes not wearing a seatbelt a primary offense in most states. It's a secondary offense. So you have to stop for something else. And if they then discover you're not wearing a seatbelt, you can get ticketed for that. So a lot of the laws were like that. In fact, I was surprised to see how low on their list Massachusetts was, where I happen to live, especially when you compare it to the excellent highway safety records that Massachusetts offers its citizens. So That was interesting to me, but Massachusetts, like most states, does not have a primary violation available for front seatbelt use, nor does it have it for back seatbelt use. And these are among the laws that are recommended by the article.
Yeah, and this is all drawn from the work of Advocates for Highway and Auto Safety, which goes through essentially all of the state laws that have an impact on driver safety. You know, we talk a lot about the federal laws and regulations on this show. We don't get as much into a lot of the state laws that are important, you know, things like seatbelt laws, motorcycle helmet laws. There's a lot of, you know, rear facing child seat laws, booster seats, laws that require kids to be seated in the rear up through age 12, learners and driving permits and licensing, nighttime driving restrictions, open container laws, ignition interlocks, text messaging. You know, there's just a big list of laws in every state that Advocates keeps track of and does an excellent job of looking at every year and trying to ensure that states where these laws haven't been passed, get on the ball and pass them, because there are significant life savings involved in getting some of these things onto the books in your state. Missouri came up very, very bad in the list, and there's a number of states that do pretty well, but I don't think there was a state that's perfect quite yet. So still some work to do on that front.
Amazing. All right, last story before we head into recalls. This is one from another friend of the show, Kids in Car Safety. The article is titled, "Nearly a Dozen Cars Stolen with Kids Left Inside Over Thanksgiving." Oh, my God. Yeah. There was at least 11 such incidences over Thanksgiving where somebody stole a car and there was kids inside. And I've said it once, if not, I've said it 1,000 times in the show. When you steal a car, you make sure there's no children inside. Okay. You look, you check that backseat.
Yeah. And so when we had Jeanette on the podcast, it was almost 2 years ago, I think.
No. She's got to come back.
We talked about her experience where her husband and her were carjacked and put in the trunk, and their child, I believe, was in the car seat in the back seat when the vehicle was stolen, but was left at their home, I believe, at the time. So that was a case where, you know, the child wasn't unattended in the seat. But it shows you, you know, the kids in car safety, which tracks this data, is tracking it, because Jeanette herself has been in a similar experience, and it happens a lot. So it happened 11 times around Thanksgiving, but also 107 children so far this year were left in vehicles that were subsequently stolen with the children inside, which, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of these victims that are ultimately reunited with their families, but there are also cases, you know, where people driving stolen cars get into a lot of trouble and crash and other things. So that threatens the kids inside. So just from a general perspective, you should never leave a child in the car unattended, period. If you're going somewhere where children aren't allowed to get out of the car and go inside, you should do that errand when you don't have your children with you. It's pretty simple, and it's something that, you know, every parent should follow, because you just never know, you know, beyond the chance of a car theft, there are a lot of other things that can happen to unattended children and vehicles that we've had to work on over the years. There are, you know, power windows and rollaways and all sorts of things that can happen, that bad things that can happen in a car with a child, not to mention leaving a child unprotected just generally is a bad idea.
Or they should change the laws and allow me to bring a child into a bar so I can drive there, get drunk, and the kid hangs out. And I give the kid the keys so everyone's safe.
We'll let you work on that on your own time.
Okay, fine.
Well, I think it's important to note that this is relative to young children, because, you know, a lot of times people have 15-year-olds that they would really prefer disappeared. So.
Yeah. No one's going to carjack a car and there's going to be a teenager in back.
There you go.
The eye rolling will be unbelievable. Like, oh my God, we're going where? Jeez.
Nobody wants that. No thief is dumb enough to hijack a 15-year-old.
Another thing that's probably worth noting in the article is that the numbers here peaked in 2022, 265, dipped to 162 last year, and then apparently have dipped to 108 so far, 107 so far this year. So that's, I mean, I think that generally, since less cars are being stolen now that the Hyundai and Kia patch is out to about 70% of those vehicles, we've seen the rates of theft of those vehicles go down a little. I think we're seeing the rates of car theft generally go down because of that, you know, the spike that was caused by Hyundai and Kia is now somewhat abating, but still not anywhere near as low as it was before the problem started happening. Maybe that's one of the reasons for the drop in the number of people that were, you know, children that were stolen along with the vehicle in the last 2 years.
Well, that's a positive note that this is declining. Love it. All right, on to recalls.
Strap in. Time for the recall now.
First up, Chrysler, 317,630 vehicles, the 2017 to 2018 Ram 3500 pickup. It's all Ram pickup. There's a whole subset of them. Loss of anti-lock brake traction control may cause the vehicle to crash without prior warning. Oh my God, this is horrible.
Michael. It is horrible. It's a pretty big recall. So it's 317,000. These are the larger Ram pickups, the 2500 and 3500. And essentially they have a brake hydraulic control unit that also impacts your anti-lock brake system, your electronic stability control system, your traction control system. So when there's a failure in the brake hydraulic control unit that impacts all those, you start to have a lot of problems controlling the vehicle when it fails. And so this is an investigation. This was a recall that was influenced by NHTSA. They started an investigation about 2 years ago, November 2022, into this problem. And, you know, they've been meeting ever since, reviewing engineering data. NHTSA started putting a little more of a crunch onto Chrysler over this problem in the last few months. So it's looks like NHTSA played a significant role in getting Chrysler to agree to this recall, a role that we hope they can continue to play in the coming years and in situations like this. Owners are going to hear about this one starting in mid-January, it looks like. And it looks like they're going to replace your hydraulic control unit with what they say is a pump motor brush material change. I don't know what that means, but you know, they're going to fix it.
It means it's a pump. It's got a motor brush. Anyway, next up, Honda, 205,000.
Well, thank you for that explanation, Anthony. That really helps.
You know, it's technical. I'll talk slower. Honda, 205,760 vehicles, the 2023 to 2024 Honda Passports, Honda Pilots, and this could be a fuel fire. What? Oh, no. They have an incomplete connection between the fuel filler neck tube and a fuel filler pipe. The fuel filler neck tube is connected to the fuel filler pipe and is connected to your shin bone. If a leak occurs in the presence of an ignition source, the risk of fire and or injury increased. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, this is a bad one. Get this one fixed, folks.
Definitely.
Yeah, this is a bad one. And I think it notes that, I don't know if it notes in here, but you may be able to detect this one by, you know, if you have fuel leaking in that area, you're probably going to smell it while you're filling up your gas tank or right after you get home and you're away from the pumps when there's not a gas smell present in the air. But owners should hear about this one relatively quickly in the next month. They're not going to replace anything. Essentially, what happened here, they didn't properly connect the filler neck tube to the pipe, and they're just going to make sure that the connection is made. So there's no parts that have to be weighed for. It's this is a remedy that should be out and quick and available to owners very soon.
All right. Last up, Volkswagen, 4,616 vehicles. This is the 2022 to 2023 Audi Q5. And the 2022 Audi A7. And this is in rare circumstances. The high voltage battery modules may experience a thermal overload, possibly resulting in smoke or fire. Oh, that's not great. And this is for the hybrid electrics.
Yeah, and this one's kind of a mystery to me as to exactly when this problem occurs. They said there had been four fire incidents that spurred on, you know, the recall, but it doesn't say whether the vehicles were parked, you know, in a garage or out on the road at the time of the failures. There was not a park outside warning issued along with this recall, but I would, just to be safe, if you do have one of those vehicles, you would probably park outside if that's something that's convenient for you in the meantime, because it looks like the remedy is going to take some time. From what I can tell, they're still trying to investigate the root cause of what's going wrong with these battery modules. And that means that it could be months, if not more, before any type of fix comes out. And it looks like they're planning not on a fix that replaces these batteries, but an installation of new software that monitors the batteries. So we'll see how this turns out. This looks like a recall that might require owners to wait for some time, even well after the first owner notification date, which is January 24th, when owners should start hearing about it.
And now, listeners, I apologize to Mr. Fred Perkins. We ran out of time for this week's TAO. I'm realizing it now, and it's a good one, so we're definitely going to do it. Can we do cybersecurity and latency next week?
I don't know, Anthony. I'm in great demand. I'll have to see if we can fit it in next week.
I will make sure.
This is in the fast-breaking world of AV safety. There,
I was looking forward to this one.
Could be a lot of issues here. And I want to point out that I said Wiggly Piggly before. It's not. It's Piggly Wiggly. Sorry about that, folks.
Look, I want to cover this. As long as GM Cruise doesn't start up next week, we should have plenty of time to get to the towel. So listeners, thank you. Like, subscribe, tell your friends. Please go to autosafety.org, click on donate. That's how we know that you love us. Or just that's how we keep running. Till next week. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
For more information, visit www.autosafety.org.